You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Good afternoon, my conscious co-creators. Welcome to another edition of the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. I am very, very pleased that you are here with me today. As always, we've got a great guest in studio today. But first, of course, before I introduce him, let's do our quotes of the day from the universe and from Abraham. Let's see what they have in store for us today. First, from the universe. There's no such thing as a lost soul. I know where they are, and everyone makes it home. Thanks for caring, the universe. We love our quotes from Mike Dooley in the universe. I love it. He has like such a sense of humor. Yes, a soul is never lost because the universe always knows where all the little souls are, hiding around, playing hide-and-go-seek probably half the time. Not too much to say about that one. It's very rare. I don't have too much to say about a quote, but I think I'm just going to move on to the Abraham quote. That I'll have more to say about. Every time you say, I appreciate that, I really like that, I applaud that, I acknowledge the value in that. Every time you do that, you spend some of your energy. And it is the spending of the energy that creates a vacuum, so to speak, or an attraction, so to speak, that draws more and more and more and more. Abraham. Okay, so I'm kind of feeling that Abraham is trying to kind of explain a little bit of the mechanisms of the law of attraction in this. And what Abraham is saying is that as we focus upon something, and it's an object of our attention, and we look at it and we're like, I really like that. Oh, that's like awesome. That's wonderful. Yes, I want more of this in my life. I want more of that in my life. That as we kind of emotionally get into the moment, we're expending our energy. And that expending of the energy is creating sort of a bit of an energetic vacuum. And so what happens when there's a vacuum? Well, nature rushes to fill it. And it's in creating that energetic vacuum that nature rushes to fill it. And what does it rush to fill that vacuum with? The very thing that we're desiring. The very thing that we have these amazing feeling thoughts about. Again, this, if I know Abraham, this probably works in all directions, which means if you're saying, I hate that, oh my God, this is awful, I can't stand that, that's also an expenditure of energy. That's also creating a vacuum. And that vacuum also allows nature to rush in and fill it with more of the very thing that we're talking about, complaining about, gossiping about that we don't want. And so this is why energy management is so important. Where are we focusing our energy? How are we reacting to things? The more we expend our energy on things that are appealing, that we love, that bring us joy and happiness, the more room we kind of make for more things that bring us joy and happiness. And the more we expend it on things that don't, that give us difficulty, that cause us to have some heartache, the more we expend the energy in that direction, and that allows more stuff to come in. So basically what Abraham is saying here is, don't put your energy out for the stuff that you don't want in your life. Let's keep it on the things that we do want, that we want more of, that we want to, you know, create bigger, better, brighter, more beautiful stuff in our lives. So that's a kind of an interesting quote today. Two kind of odd quotes. I don't know. I guess this is a day of odd quotes. Usually quotes often make sense to me. These don't make, I mean, they make sense to me, but they also kind of confusing in a way. I don't know. So I hope you like our quotes of the day. And next week we'll have more quotes of the day for you. And before I introduce my guest, just a quick shout out to the people on the Facebook live stream. Alex, William, Frank, Jane, Louise, Joni, thank you all for joining us. Love you all. Thank you. All right, so let's get to it. It is my pleasure now to welcome Jeff Cox. Jeff, while in college, was guided to the teachings of Paul Brunton. In the early 70s, he moved to the area around Ithaca, New York, where he and many other students studied with Anthony Damiani.
Damiani, great.
Thank you. Who was a close student of Brunton's. Guided by Anthony's inspiration, Jeff helped to build Wisdom's Goldenrod, a center for spiritual study, and lived there for 5 years as a resident monk. Later, in quotes, yes, a monk. Because we know real monks. Like, yeah. We got a picture up there of a real monk.
Yes.
Because the founder of the radio station, Talking Alternative, became a Theravadan monk.
Oh.
Like a real heavy-duty monk. Mm. Later, as a devotee of His Holiness the Dalai Lama, Jeff was instrumental in establishing Snow Lion Publications as the major publisher of Tibetan Buddhism. After nearly 30 years, wow, he retired as president and co-owner in 2012. Oh, awesome. Since then, he became a board member of the Paul Brunton Philosophic Foundation, which is the principal guardian of Brunton's literary legacy. His publishing background has been put to use in editing and publication of Brunton's unpublished writing. The latest effort is the recently released Instructions for Spiritual Living, oops, which I hold up now for you to see. A very, very cool book. Thank you. Very interesting. Ithaca, New York. So is that the part of the burnt over district?
Do you remember in Greek mythology about Ulysses, his journeys and mm-hmm. the 12 trials? Well, that was his, all those trials were all life's experiences that eventually brought him back to Ithaca.
Ithaca, yeah.
Right. And so Ithaca supposedly represents like the mind of the God. The divine mind or divine intelligence.
Okay.
So we reunite eventually. If you move to Ithaca, uh-huh. eventually, I promise, you'll reunite with the divine mind.
Huh,
so it's a kind of a symbol for what PB might call sagehood. Or we would say Buddhahood right, or enlightened right. being or whatever. But he means it in a very particular way.
Yeah. Because I just know in upstate New York, I'm not sure as if, but then like the upstate western New York is what they call the burnt over district, which a lot of...
You mean like Buffalo? Burnt over like...
Yeah, no, but it burnt over district, it's where Lilydale is. I don't know if you heard of Lilydale.
I haven't actually.
But also John Smith, who founded Mormonism.
Yes.
His vision was up in that same area.
Yes, Elmira is a town near south of Ithaca. And Ithaca's in the Finger Lakes of New York. There's, you know, God put his hands or she on the earth. And there are these 10 or 11, however many lakes. So maybe there were 6 fingers on one hand. I don't know. But there's these beautiful lakes.
Yes.
And it's wine country. And there are many rolling hills and waterfalls. In our county alone, where Ithaca is, there's like 100 waterfalls.
Wow. Yeah, wow.
There's some spectacular
ones. I haven't been up there, I think, since I was like looking at colleges.
Yeah, Cornell University and Ithaca College are there. And, you know, it's a town that has a 30,000 population of residents, and then you have 30,000 students come
in.
So it's quite a cultural center. They say if you can't find it in Ithaca, you'll find it in New York City. Like that.
Cool. I gotta take my wife up there and go one weekend and just get her out of the city. I would love to love to see all that stuff.
So, summer's the best.
Now Paul Brunton, he may be a spiritual teacher, but he's not necessarily one of the more well-known spiritual teachers, is he?
I think what happened was in the 60s, when there was a big influx of first Indian teachers, and then shortly in the wake of that, there was the Buddhist teachers from various places, but especially the Tibetan Buddhists, which is how I got connected with Snow Lion and Tibetan Buddhism. That all happened then, the 60s and so on, and Maharishi Mahesh Yogi came, and you know it became much more popularized at that time. But Paul Brunton wrote his books in the 1930s and 40s and early 50s.
Oh, okay.
He wrote like 10 or 11 books.
Mm-hmm.
They were a graded series of kind of like introducing one to the idea of a mystical path, and then he develops the themes and gives meditations. And in the last books, he goes more into spiritual philosophy, and the hidden teaching beyond yoga and the wisdom of the overself are the two. It's a pair of books that we recently republished with North Atlantic Books that, well, they represent a recreation in Western terms, including scientific concepts, for English-speaking people of the doctrines of Vedanta and Mahayana Buddhism that he was entrusted by people he met in Asia to. He was instructed and entrusted to bring these teachings. He was given a lot of teachings. He brought these teachings back to Britain, where he grew up, and published there with the company that's now the equivalent of Penguin Random House in the UK. And they were simultaneously published here. But what I want to say about him, and just to answer your question about not very well known, in that time period, 30s, 40s, and 50s, he was like the go-to person for Eastern spirituality. His books were reviewed all over the world, and even in kind of places like Alabama, you know, where now strong Bible Belt areas, and they were even then, but people were curious about, we hear about Indian culture or whatever, what's really with these people that meditate? They seem backwards in terms of their economy, but in terms of their spirituality, they were quite advanced. And I think the same was true in Tibet, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So he was like your Bill Nye, the science guy of of you know, Eastern religion.
Gotcha,
when they
gotcha.
Had something going on, they needed an authority, he would be there. He was he lived with people in you know, like royalty in Spain and Greece, and like the Maharaja of Mysore in India. He was a guest of all these people.
Oh, wow.
But he also just hung out with everyday people, and he traveled all over. He was basically a spiritual researcher. Even at the end, he said, I'm basically a researcher, even though he had great mystical experiences even as a teenager, starting as a teenager.
Oh, interesting, interesting. So, and 30s, 40s, and 50s, when did he pass?
In 1981.
Oh, in 81.
He was born in 1898 in the cultural center of London, Bloomsbury, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot going on there, and one of the people he was close with founded a bookstore called the Atlantis Bookshop, which is still alive 100 years later.
Yeah.
It's still there in that part of London. So he was involved with a lot of the occultism, the theosophy, the spiritualism, and so on. And he had a friend who was a Buddhist monk, one of the early Theravada monks, came and said, you really ought to go to India. And so he went there, and that's where he met Ramana Maharshi. And Paul Brunton was the one who wrote this best-selling book called A Search in Secret India. And that book sold in 20 languages. It sold over 1 million copies and made Ramana famous. People started a lot of Westerners started traveling to India to sit at the feet of Ramana Maharshi.
Oh, interesting. Okay, we got to take a quick break. Quick question. Have you been to India?
Once.
Okay. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue to learn more about Instructions for Spiritual Living right here on the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Who do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo!
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We're speaking this hour with Jeff Cox, editor of Instructions for Spiritual Living, a fascinating book about a figure I actually knew nothing about, Paul Brunton. I'm curious, in your bio it says you were guided to his teachings when you were in college. How did you initially hear about him?
Okay, well, it's one of those kind of small woo-woo stories, you know.
I love those woo-woo stories.
I took a semester off from college. Uh-huh. I was studying geology. And I went to France.
Mm-hmm.
I went to visit some friends that lived near Zurich, and they one day took me to a neighboring farmhouse that was haunted. Not because it was haunted, but because they knew somebody that lived there. Okay. It was interesting. And because I was told it was haunted, I started asking a lot of questions. And they said, you should read this book. And they gave me There Is a River by Edgar Cayce.
Oh, yes.
So maybe your listeners know something about Edgar Cayce. But anyway, he's the sleeping prophet, right? Yes, he didn't know what he was saying, but a lot of his things got written down. There's a foundation in Virginia Beach.
The ARE. Yeah.
The ARE. So I was reading this book, and it was like the lightning bolt in my psyche. I mean, I had been a religious person growing up, but always felt something was lacking in my Christian tradition. And here was somebody writing saying that God was knowable, or God, you know, there could be some kind of mystical experience or connection with the divine. And I thought, great, I don't have to wait till I'm dead, you know? So, and he also said yoga and meditation would be helpful. So after my trip, I go back to Columbus, Ohio, where I grew up. Oh, I was Ohio State University boy. Go Buckeyes. Still, I look at the scores, you know. And I sought out a yoga teacher, and that person said, I started asking a lot of questions. I was coming with a lot of, something was coming to birth. I really wanted to understand more about life. And she said, you should read Paul Brunton. And as it was, the church I was going to had been visited by Paul Brunton in the 1950s.
Oh.
And he had started a meditation group there.
Oh, wow.
And this yoga teacher was part of that, although she was a later generation, hadn't met him directly. But so I got part of that group, and they wrote to Paul Brunton. We call him PB. That's what he liked to be called. They wrote to PB and said, please come visit us. We have a lot of questions. We'd like to be with you for a little bit. And he says, well, I'm not coming. He was living in semi-seclusion then. This was in the late 60s.
Okay.
And he had moved to Switzerland. He was still seeing people, but not lecturing, not traveling that much.
Gotcha.
And he said, I can't come, but I will send my student, Anthony Damiani, who was living in Ithaca at the time. He grew up in New York City and worked here in the city. He had a bookstore in Ithaca called the American Brahmin Bookstore. So it was like, you know, not the Indian Brahmins, but the American Brahmins. So the people that are interested in truth seeking, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And he came and he spent a few weekends with us in Ithaca. And I was so impressed with him that eventually when I graduated, I decided not to pursue my career. And I moved to Ithaca to just get a job, see what I could do. Studied at the at this bookstore like 4 or 5 nights a week with meditation, and eventually, like a year after I moved there, we built Wisdom's Goldenrod. There's 4 buildings. It's on some of Anthony's land, and there's meditation center classes are held there. Uh-huh. There's a library. There's 2 residential structures, and most of the buildings are made out of logs, and they have kind of Asian mandala designs or these curved roofs like you see with Asian buildings. Uh-huh. So it was like the East and the West coming together, the pioneers of the West with the log cabins and then these architectural touches that reflect the East. So I lived there for 5 years. Anthony lived till 1984. Paul Brunton died in 1981, so I was kind of a spiritual orphan, I guess, in 1984. But we had met the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama actually came to Ithaca, New York. My business partner at the time was close with the Dalai Lama, invited him to America. He came to Ithaca. He actually stayed in my house for a few days. I had one of the newer houses in the group, and we needed a place for him and his entourage, so he stayed there and greatly impacted us. This was in 1979.
Oh, wow.
So in 1984, I was asked to join Snow Lion Publications and get that back off the ground. So I I was studying Paul Brunton and a lot of other doctrines. Anthony taught, I see you have a collection of Young's books, the original writings, the hard stuff to read. Well, we studied a number of those volumes and also various schools of Buddhism and Vedanta and other Indian schools, Sankhya Yoga and different ones, because we thought the philosophic path is an inclusive path. PB wanted to reintroduce this idea of philosophy as the love of truth and the pursuit of truth.
Yeah.
So not just up here, but, with the heart and with compassion and understanding and integrating rather than disintegrating, the Shankara, the Vedantists and the Buddhists, they argue forever about the nature of self, for instance. is the self ultimate reality or is it ultimate illusion? And they're still fighting for over 1,000 years. But it hones the understanding. And I think this path that Paul Brunton is offering is not only the mystical side, but it's the path of really understanding the teachings of life. He sees life as the teacher. Life as the teacher is not that, it's not him. A good teacher, he would say, gives you back yourself, helps you develop your own ability to think.
Yes. Empowers you, not makes you reliant on them.
And develop your own intuition.
Yes. Yeah.
So go ahead.
So would you consider his writings, are they primarily Buddhist or are they more eclectic?
It's a mix. The part that comes in from Buddhism is more the Mahayana, seek enlightenment for the sake of all. It's not, it's more of the philosophic sage should serve humanity, the philosophic sage becomes the voice of the divine, but in everyday life. You might be a checkout person in a retail store or something, but it's something about the presence you're bringing to your environment, whatever it is, that it's that can express divine qualities in our life. That's more from the Buddhist side, I guess. And his mysticism is very much, the Ramana teachings, I'm sure you've heard this, who am I? The who am I inquiry, self-inquiry. Well, Paul Brunton picked that up. But the other side that he adds is the what am I? So the who am I takes us back subjectively. I'm not just the body.
Right.
I'm not just the emotional feelings.
I'm not my thoughts.
Not those thoughts, right, etc. So then what am I? And you supposedly reach a state where you internally everything remains quiet. You know, no more thought interfering, no more distractions about your desires and who you're still mad at or any of, you know, all of that quiets down and you're in an inward listening state. Mm. So in that area, what he called in that space internally, that the higher self, which Paul Brunton calls the overself, can reveal itself. It's always considered an act of grace that as an individual, we can ready ourselves for the spontaneous arrival of self-knowledge, we could say.
Okay.
He wouldn't say that the divine isn't already here with us. In fact, it very much is.
Right.
You know, he would say our very awareness, that power by which we know anything, is the universal over-self in us, is a universal consciousness.
Mm.
I read a quote by Schrodinger recently. Oh, you know the physicist?
Yeah.
He says, there's one universal mind that that phases as all these different consciousnesses.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, encapsulates in a way Paul Brunton's idea of what is a sage. It's somebody who knows the one universal mind that's our core, that's present in us as awareness and other things. And we recognize that it's phasing or it's expressing or it's revealing every moment itself as the conscious experiences what we're each being is having.
Right. It's like the one universal mind is manifesting in all these little ways to know itself.
The knowing itself is what we call enlightenment.
Ah.
And he calls it, PB has this chapter in here called insight. And insight is his term. Well, he says it this way. Intuition is about everything else. It's about everything knowable, everything that can appear, be manifest, be known.
Yeah.
You could have intuition that would tell you about something about those contents of our experience.
Right.
But insight is the intuition of the formless presence within us. It's the knowledge of the formless.
Okay.
And it comes in initially as glimpses, and the glimpses maybe happen more often or they last a little longer. But when the process is finished, then there's constant awareness of the divine in us, the inner, we experience it as inner peace, as intelligence, as presence.
Right.
But there's that, and it's not just going into trance.
Right.
The void trance of the mystic, nirvi kalpa samadhi, you've probably heard this expression, where samadhi. Everything disappears and there's only the one mind. That's the who am I. That's the who am I part. Mm. The what am I is what we just talked about.
Right.
How that one mind, that one intelligence expresses itself.
Right. Beautiful. I just want to ask you, since you mentioned, you know, one of the chapters of the book. So there's one title in here that says, "Is the soul in the heart?"
Yes.
That one particularly drew me. what does he mean by that?
The overself is a formless presence, right? So that means you can't locate it. If you could locate it, you would give it. It would be here, not there.
Right.
So it would have some quality over here on the right side that it doesn't have on the left side, right? It's not like pure light because there's darkness.
Right.
So you can't just say it's not in the binary framework,
right,
basically.
It's in a non-dual.
It's beyond the yin-yang of life.
Right.
But body is a microcosm of the macrocosm.
Right.
Like all the principles in the universe, and I know you're familiar because you do energy work and you call in the forces of all different levels of galactic and beyond and all the way down to, you know, what's present and interested in us here, our ancestors or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
So the body has a place, and it's the heart center, and the heart center is not, well, It's described as being like a couple finger widths to the right of the midline of the chest.
Oh, okay.
Like, and it's oddly enough where people tend to point when they go, point at their chest. There's a sense, there's a feeling in the body. And PB describes in his book, The Quest of the Overself, and he probably describes it here too in this chapter, that there's something about this little cave in the heart. It's kind of called a cave in the heart,
okay,
where the Overself is active and felt in the body. It's not like a lot of people, if you concentrate on the heart center, mm-hmm, you can start to feel energy there. It might be pulsing.
Absolutely.
It might just be strong.
Absolutely.
Energy. It kind of feels very centering if you focus on it. And many of the practices are given to focus on the heart.
Yeah.
One, if I have just a second, once I asked Anthony about this, I said, if the Overself is everywhere, why are we meditating on the heart? And he said, just meditate on the heart. Sort of a Zen style teacher he was.
I see. Okay, let's hold that thought about the heart, and we'll come back and I have some more questions about the book and PB with my guest Jeff Cox right here on the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, and we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We do this every Thursday, 12 noon Eastern to 1 p.m. right here on talkradio.nyc and on Facebook Live. And we're here today discussing the book Instructions for Spiritual Living by Paul Brunton. And we're here with Jeff Cox, the editor, really talking about a lot of interesting things.
One thing I'd like to mention is,
sure,
is that this book came out of the large literary archive that Paul Brunton left,
right,
when he died. He went through all of his papers before he died. We had some of our friends from Wisdom's Goldenrod were with him up to the end.
Oh, really?
And he instructed a couple of them how to edit his works, and we developed a 16-volume set called The Notebooks of Paul Brunton, which are, you can read them online on the paulbrunton.org website.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
wow.
They're the notebooks of Paul Brunton, and they're in 28 categories of spiritual topics, I guess, but
right,
everything from taking care of your body towards what's the nature of, you know, God and the one mind. And
wow,
so,
okay, so
there's a lot there. But he, even though he stopped publishing in the 50s, he
right,
continued writing
right,
every day.
So
every
how
day.
Many books did he actually write that were just books that he wrote?
11.
11 books. So he has 11 books, and then he has all this other stuff that he wrote that's now like being put together, like with this book, and I'm assuming there are other
right,
books
and
like
some,
that as well.
Well, yes. Cornell University is last fall accepted the physical archive into their rare books and manuscript collection. So we wanted, a part of the foundation's work is to preserve this work into the future. I'm 71. People on our board are in, you know, 70s, 80s.
Good shape for 71. I
wouldn't
have guessed that.
I sleep well. I'm a vegetarian.
Awesome.
Yeah. And we have a digital archive. Everything that went to Cornell, we have digitally, and we're putting this together to have on a separate section of our website. So the actual entire archive that was left can be studied there.
Wow.
So
wow,
he wrote amazing. A number of essays, and that's what's incorporated into this book. And what I did was to choose the ones I wanted, to put them in the order that they're in, according to my understanding of spiritual unfoldment and practice. And I wrote the introduction for it, although it just says the Philosophic Foundation. Yeah. But
Who chose the title?
One of his past lives, Paul Brunton, was Wang Yang Ming, who was a famous Chinese philosopher.
Ah.
And he had a book called Instructions for Practical Living.
Oh.
And one of our board members, who's actually the main archivist, he has studied Wang Yang Ming a fair amount. Mm-hmm. And as we were discussing what to call this book, because it came out in an earlier edition in the mid-80s, called Essays on the Quest. And it was very bland. It was like the chapters were just shuffled. There was no particular order. It was just not put together anything like what Inner Traditions did with this volume. So our board member friend said, well, Wang Yang Ming had Instructions for Practical Living. And I went, like, the light went off. Instructions for Spiritual Living. So that's really what it is. And I see this book as a manual. It gives the overall view of what spiritual development is like. In the personal way, you know, it covers the essential topics. Like, he goes into meditation. He goes very carefully through the three stages of deepening in meditation.
Oh, really?
But he doesn't say, do it on the breath or do it on a mantra. He leaves it up to the individual in this essay to follow their own guidance, their own heart, in what attracts them. What do they want to focus on? You read a quote, that second quote you read from Abraham is about what you focus on is what, you know, you attract. And there's this saying, I guess, that what we attend to grows. It grows.
Yes.
So if we're giving energy to whatever it is in our spiritual practice that we want to unfold in ourselves, that's oftentimes what will grow.
Interesting. So would you consider this a book for, like, a novice, somebody's just starting off on their spiritual path, or is this something a little more heavy duty that, like, you probably want to have a little bit of a background in spiritual?
Well, my first book was, you know, There Is a River by Edgar Cayce. And I think I went from there to, like, Autobiography of a Yogi, right? You might have too, you know. I mean, that book has sold a gazillion copies. So it's kind of like the Madison Avenue of spiritual pursuit is kind of like people see, you know, it was the imagery of Asian teachers and the gurus looking a certain way. And Paramahansa Yogananda has those very, you know, childlike eyes. Yeah. And he looks very happy and peaceful. Yeah. And these are the kind of the qualities that we want. So I think those kinds of books are to inspire. I mean, the Gospel of Ramakrishna is a very inspirational book. If you know of Ramakrishna, he was an Indian sage, and the whole Ramakrishna Vivekananda Society grew out of that. There's two or three locations here in Manhattan where that exists.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, and Quest Bookshop.
Oh, Quest, yes.
That's the Theosophical Society. But the Ramakrishna thing, yes. So what I would say is I wish I had had this book, Instructions for Spiritual Living, a short time after I read Autobiography for a Yogi.
I wish I had had
this book, because he kind of shows you what the pitfalls are of the path. I mean, there's a series of there's a lot in the middle of this book on the development of character. And he considers character is something that's required in order to have realization, a developed character. But it continues to develop even after the initial kinds of stages of realization. It is possible to have a glimpse of reality, like here and now, any of us, you know, and we may not be so like, oh, I'm really not ready. I'm still smoking. I still have negative thoughts. Well, the divine kind of comes and grabs us and shakes us a little. And that's what we call spiritual seeking. I'm a spiritual seeker. It's that... Yeah. the grace of the divine, which has been developing us all along, at some point makes the higher self evident. Like, oh, my reality isn't the mind-body personality primarily.
Right.
It's something more. That's the who am I path. So it makes us aware of that. And then we call ourselves questers, and we wear shirts without, shirts without, collars, and wear our beads, and, whatever, carry our cloth bag with Om on it. All those things, we start to identify more as a quester.
Right.
So I lost my train of thought.
That's okay, because I got questions for you.
Okay, go.
So there are two things, the kind of things that you mentioned that I'd love to hear his perspective on, gurus and ego, because it's something that I have lately hearing sort of different conversations around gurus and around the ego. Mm. So I'd be curious.
Well, ask more specifically. You're wondering about gurus that fall, that get,
not necessarily fall, but is there still a need for gurus?
Oh, okay. There's a chapter in this book. I'm talking about the book because that's what brought me here.
Mm-hmm.
Called Self-Reliance or Discipleship.
Right.
And it's a long, longish chapter because Paul Brunton describes various ways that we relate to teachers, the need for teachers, and what a good teacher is, The thing is what I mentioned earlier about a good teacher helps develop, doesn't disempower you, doesn't necessarily draw attention to them primarily. They kind of want to, they don't really want your GUIs, a sage. They don't want your GUIs, say, no, Sam, you're great just the way you are. You've got all the resources you need. And here, maybe you want to read this, or maybe you want to look at some teaching I gave on that. But always for you to decide, for you to develop your reason and about the path so that you can understand and observe your own interior processes, understand your own interior processes, and be true to your own inspiration. Because most gurus, teachers, can't actually give you who you are. They certainly can't awaken you, but they can't even say, no, Sam, your next path could be I asked PB, and I consider him somebody who could actually know something of your own interiority.
Uh-huh.
I asked him the first time I was in Switzerland visiting him. I had a few extra days. I said, this was 1975.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what should I do, PB? And he kind of paused. He thought for a moment. I don't know if he was thinking, but he was looking interiorly. He says, there's a Tibetan monastery near Zurich. I think you should go and spend a little time there in a retreat. Well, I wasn't particularly interested in Tibetan Buddhism at the time.
Right.
This was something different. I thought, oh, a retreat, okay. But this same monastery, 10 years later, was where the Dalai Lama came to Switzerland and gave the Kala Chakra initiation to 5,000 people. And he stayed in that same monastery. And a lot of my friends and I went there for this initiation. And that was the year after I got involved as a Tibetan Buddhist publisher. So it was like PB saw something that I might not have anticipated, but it was not like, oh, you're going to be a Tibetan Buddhist publisher, go here and do this.
Right.
He just like throw out the hint. And intuition is very much that way. I think you've spoken.
Yes.
It's a small, quiet voice.
Yes,
it doesn't insist. It's not trying to, ego insists when it wants something. Our desires, our aversions, they're compelling, they're gripping, they push us. But intuition is more like,
subtle, more quiet.
And PB says intuition actually is the over-self expressing in you. It's oftentimes the quiet voice in the heart, you know. It just comes in. He would say intuition and even conscience he would put in a higher order beyond what we normally think of as our personality. The conscience is like the wisdom of your ages, the wisdom of your many lives. Kind of the essence of each life is kind of goes into this higher level of our being.
I could go
into give you a theosophic term if you want, but this is where an intuition is even higher than that.
Mm.
It's like the You know, the nectar that drips down from the heavens. Right. You might have heard this.
Can you always trust the intuition?
That's the reason we have reason, is that, you know, you might have to kind of know that what's being suggested isn't a malignant force that's got your ear that's saying, jump off that bridge, God will save you.
Or sometimes, you know, the ego can work its way into the intuition a little bit of like, you know, we all have our own biases and our own filters, and the intuition comes through that, so it can taint it sometimes a little bit. Oh, yes, like this is something beautiful, but it's also to your advantage in a way.
Yes, you're right. So we will probably continue up till the end to also see some personal advantage in things.
Yeah.
It's just like teachers that are seeking fame, sex, money, power.
Right.
You know, it gets all confused.
Yeah.
They might do it in subtle ways.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to have sex because it's good for you.
Right.
You know, it'll further your development.
Yeah,
I've read these things, you know.
Yeah.
I know certain teachers that rationalize.
Yeah.
So anyway.
And say something. Okay, we got to take our last break of the show. We're talking about the book Instructions for Spiritual Living by Paul Brunton with my guest, Jeff Cox, the editor of the book. And we will be right back in just a moment.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
Welcome back to the Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity. We've been speaking with Jeff Cox this hour, editor of the book Instructions for Spiritual Living by Paul Brunton. So this book, I mean, it's fascinating to me. It's like, now, you know, I'll tell you a little secret. I never told anyone this before on the air. I usually don't have time to read the books before I interview people involved with them, but I see how the interview goes, and then depending on the interview, then it's like I decide whether I'm going to read the book or not.
That makes sense.
So now I really have to read this book, though. And I have a long list of books to read.
I assume you said that because somehow it got your interest, so thank you. I'm glad. So he did promote, the last part of that chapter on teacher-student is called The Independent Path.
Mm.
And in the end, he says it's only your own higher self that can actually liberate you. He'll say there are powerful gurus that can give you a little bit of a hint of what it's like, because you get in their atmosphere and they have
their field,
and they're very peaceful, and they can quiet your emotions. They can create a kind of stoppage in your field such that then that divine presence can kind of come in. It can people get a glimpse. But the only way it's going to I've noticed in my own life, being around powerful teachers, and then you go away, you can feel supported by them. I had one teacher where I knew she was meditating at
our time, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I could feel some, I wouldn't necessarily be thinking about it. I'd be at work and I'm typing on my computer, talking to a customer, and I'd suddenly feel this energy, and it was, yeah, it was her, you know, yeah. And I'd call my wife. She said, yeah, 4 o'clock. I felt it, you know, it's like that. So you get, it's a kind of, addiction in a way. It could, yeah, it's seductive.
Yeah.
It's seductive. And you think, well, when I'm around the guru, I feel really good. But and they'll encourage you, well, just stay around me forever and ever, you
right,
know.
Right.
But it just doesn't work that way. Eventually, yeah, you move on. And right, even I think the quote you read, which is really important, about what you desire, you attract. But our desires, which are really just desire, and they're not, well, in the beginning, we could desire something that's actually for our own unfoldment, but when it becomes an addiction and we just want more,
right,
eventually it will burn itself out, because that's the whole Buddhist teachings about, you know, unenlightened existence is unsatisfactory. It has, there's pain woven in with the pleasure.
Right, right.
So the point is that independent path gets you working with your own resources, develop your own inner peace through meditation, develop your own sense of solidity and groundedness in your practice, and your wisdom of understanding yourself and others, and like that. So it's not giving the power to the guru. You get to begin to be the your own, somebody recently called it your own CEO. But it's like, you know, you're in charge. You still learn
you're
from
a
good
yourself.
CEO has people under them, right?
Right.
That help
right,
them. That's right, like the teachings in a book or a teacher, or
sure,
you meet somebody and, you know, you impress me one way or another. Right. So these are all ways a person who's in taking self-responsibility can still take in what others have to give.
Right. You can have your own agency, but you can still learn from others in the process.
Absolutely. It's not about cutting off.
Right. Exactly. Now, Paul Brunton was lived in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. I mean, he lived longer, but that was when he was really active in publishing and doing stuff.
And moving in the world.
Are the things he wrote, are books like this that are compiled from it, are they still really relevant today in today's society?
Yes, they are. I mentioned the autobiography of a yogi book.
Yes.
Well, his book, A Search in Secret India, and one of his follow-ons, A Search in Secret Egypt, are very inspiring. Maybe I did him an injustice by not just saying, well, you could read A Search in Secret India, because that's a book that woke up a lot of people to take up spiritual practice.
Okay.
One thing I did in this book, part of the editorial process my wife and I did, was to, PB wrote in the gendered language of the 20th century, where he, his, him was the standard. And so people these days, especially with what the whole revolution that's gone on in our culture, could read a book like one of these books and think, well, he's always saying he and him, and that if you're a guy reading it, sometimes it even bothers the guys.
Yeah.
But it's not so heavy that way. You just have to put PB in context. I mean, if you're going to read Emerson or some other writer of the past, they're going to use the same form. It was just the standard form. That's the only thing I would say that's not absolutely contemporary about what he does. But, you know, he falls back on like quantum physics and relativity, especially in his hidden teaching beyond yoga, to show the nature of mind or mentalism, which is really his philosophic thrust. I mean, you can read in the Eastern teaching, mind is all.
Yeah.
Everything is mind. But they don't, they just say, everything is mind. Okay, great. Now, what about I got to pay the bill?
About the heart?
And the heart. Well, the heart is, it's not, this isn't mind. Mind is like the divine ground. It's like the intelligence that underlies the universe.
Oh,
and that's spontaneous heart wisdom, right?
Okay.
So, what I said before, the Schrodinger quote, there's one universal mind that's phasing as the consciousness of all creatures. So PB basically goes through, in especially the hidden teaching beyond yoga, step by step. He even brings in, he has a chapter on the revelations of relativity. He goes through step by step to show that actually what we have here is basically experience. We don't really have anything. There's nothing outside. There's not a copy. Mm. We're not like in our body. So many people, they have an epistemology that starts with I'm in my brain somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
And somehow information comes in through my eyes.
Yeah.
Well,
it's a very mechanical view.
It's a very mechanical view. And there's enough information out there that would show that it's not really that way. I mean, there are a number of cases of people being on an operating table.
Yes, and seeing themselves pop out.
They see their body from above. They're outside, and they can hear and see, even though the body on the table is not functioning sensorially.
Right. Yeah, no, I've had Dr. Raymond Moody on my show, and you know, he wrote the book Life After Life, and he did a lot of near-death experience research. So, yeah, there's a ton in that, right? One question I want to make sure to get to before we finish up, which is you've been studying Paul Brunton for years. You edited books. Do you still find some things in his work that surprise you after all this time?
I've had to read this book four or five times during the editorial process. And I tell my wife, Christy, I say, you know, I feel like these teachings are being pressed into my cellular structure.
Mm.
So I'm still, in reading this book, I'm still coming upon, still coming upon things that I didn't quite get, or putting things in perspective in a way that I didn't quite get. Or, you know, PB writes that, and I think this is very true, that understanding, for one thing, a lot of our spirituality downplays understanding, thinking, thinking, that's just wrecking everything because you label stuff, right?
Right.
But understanding is what can inspire us and empower us to choose directions or make changes in ourselves. Yeah. I mean, how do we understand if we can understand a bad habit, then we can overcome it if we can really understand it, right? So you could use your will, but I don't know if you were a smoker, you know, it's like giving up the ego is a little harder than giving up smoking.
Yeah.
But giving up smoking, you know, you will have a situation where your decision will be challenged.
Yeah.
PB has a chapter here that says, if you want to develop a good character trait like truth telling, you will have a situation that challenges you. And that's where the ego, you said ego teacher, but I'd say ego teachings come in. You know, you indicated, well, I just need, you rationalize instead of being following your reason, which came to the conclusion this is just absolutely not good.
Right.
You rationalize and say, well, just this once, you know.
Yeah.
So,
all right. Well, Jeff, it was a pleasure having you in studio today.
Thank you
so much for coming by.
Yeah.
The book is Instructions for Spiritual Living. Go out and get it. It's available everywhere, I assume.
It's Inner Traditions. It was put out in April, and I'm sure it's online and probably the Barnes and Nobles and other stores.
By Paul Brunton, we'll make sure when we post the podcast that it's there's a link to it. A great book. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sam.
I appreciate it. And thank you, all of my loyal listeners. I forgot to shout out all my Facebook fans, but thank you, Gilbert, Elizabeth. Oh, Elizabeth. And everybody else. Without you, there's no point to doing the show. So thank you all. I appreciate you so much. And stay tuned. We're going to have more great shows coming up for you next week and for the rest of the year. So thank you for tuning in, and we will talk to you next week.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network. Are you stuck in a rut? Negative thoughts, feelings, and conversations got you down? Hi, I'm Noreen Sumter, the Potentiator. Tune in every Tuesday at 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time and listen for new ideas on my show, Beyond Potential, Live Life Your Way, on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
The best designs for your life start at home. I'm David Thiergartner, interior designer and host of At Home. Listen live Tuesday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time as we talk to the very best professionals about interior design and the design that's all around us right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.